This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
There is no doubt in my mind that 2018 will be remembered as the year of the dueling memos. We get into that now on Tactics. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Tactics. Good to be with you this morning. To everybody out there braving the elements and the weather, trying to get to work, appreciate you being with us this morning, because it is nasty out there. Now, the wind isn't all that bad, but the rain is like hurricane level. So try to be safe out there. The roads are slick. Try not to slip and fall, anything like that, because you got to be cautious when the weather gets this bad. Now, it had lightened up a little bit to a drizzle. Well, more than a drizzle. It was still coming down. But by the time that I got out of the car, it had subsided substantially. So let's hope that the worst is behind us. I hope it doesn't pour like this for much longer. But that is something that we've got to deal with. You know, it's winter in Alabama. That's just how it is. And since I didn't get to do my broadcast yesterday, I want to say happy birthday to President Ronald Reagan yesterday. February was a good month for presidents. Lincoln, Washington, Reagan. So lots of presidential birthdays in February. We'll try to mention them as they come. Didn't get to do the broadcast yesterday. But a happy birthday, belated birthday to President Ronald Reagan, who would have been 107 were he alive today. So let's go ahead and jump into this memo thing, because I want to take a second and take a break from the actual content of the memos and talk about the concept of the memos. What I mean by that is, what are these memos? Why are they coming out like this? Why are the parties fighting over them? These memorandums are, in essence, a summary of information. So what has happened is the Intel Committee, the Republicans on it and the Democrats on it, have looked at the raw data and gone through it, and they took notes about what they thought was important and gave you the highlights. So if you're my age and did this when you were in high school for book reports, instead of actually reading the book, what you're getting is the spark notes. You're getting the long and short of it, but keep in mind, there is no reason that these memos have to be in any specific way complete or comprehensive. And the only people that know whether they are or not are the people that have actually seen the raw data. In other words, the handful of people on the Intelligence Committee and very, very high-ranking officials with classified information clearance. And that's part of the problem that we have here. Because the reason you haven't heard these memos released in this way before is because if you were going to declassify information in the past, what you declassified was not the memos or the notes that the parties took. What you actually declassified were the raw materials. In this case, it would have been the FISA warrants, the application to get a warrant on Carter Page. But they didn't do that. They released the memos. So what we're basically getting is what the Republicans thought were important in the information that they've seen. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not against seeing the memo. But this is why that's problematic. Because you could reverse it and do it the other way. At any point, let's say that the Democrats were in charge again. They had the House, they had the Senate, they had the presidency. Let's say this was 2008, 2009. And there was an investigation going on about President Barack Obama. And what the Democrat Intelligence Committee did was look into it and come out with their take on what was going on in the investigation, that there were some questions about how the warrants were obtained, that kind of thing. Well, we shouldn't take that at face value, because the Democrats have a vested interest in saying, hey, this investigation, the origin of all this into the guy that wound up becoming our president, there were some reasons to believe that the motives might have been political, and there's several reasons to believe that the people were involved were actively rooting against President Obama in the process. If the Democrats came out with a memo detailing all of that, the Republicans, myself included, even though I'm not a Republican, would have taken a look at those records and said, I don't know that we can trust those, because you guys have a reason to want Barack Obama, these scandals, to just go away. And we shouldn't do that with the Republicans either. And that's why I'm not slamming the memo. I'm not saying the stuff in the memo is untrue. It may very well be true. In fact, it confirms a lot of the things that I suspected for a very long time, and I've gone over that on the show. But my point is, this is the wrong way to go about declassifying information. And this is not a slam on the Republicans or the president, but listen to what I'm saying here. This process of releasing the memos is fine, but it needs to be released with the raw material. You can't just release this information, because that's secondhand information. And even if the Republicans, let's just assume no ill intent by the Republicans whatsoever. Even if you do that, you're still seeing that information through a lens. Give us the raw materials. That's what we need for all of this to shake out. Because if we do not have that as the basis of our argument, then it kind of goes back to my idea about biblical scholarship. And I don't want to delve way off into this example, but just follow me on this. I tell people all the time, and I know folks are going to get mad at me for saying this because a lot of people like this version. The NIV is not a translation of the Bible. The New International Version is a translation of a translation of the Bible. What the NIV did was it took the 1901 American Standard Version of the Bible and paraphrased it and made it easier to understand. Nothing wrong with that, but you have to keep in mind that there are going to be some inaccuracies because you're not going back to the original documents. You're not going back to the original Greek. You're taking something that's already been translated once, that's already gone through one filter, and then translating it again. So obviously, through no fault of the people that put it together, the NIV is not the most reliable translation of the Bible because it came through a second filter. And so when you're doing things like this, to get to the facts, to get to the truth, you have to go back to the original source as much as humanly possible, because there's less chance that information gets distorted that way. And it's the same thing with these memos. What I'm saying is, even if the people who put together the GOP memo had the best of intentions, and even if they're 100% right, there may be other things in the raw documents that we've missed, that they've missed, that are important that we need to know about this. And I don't like this idea of the Republicans putting out their take on it and the Democrats putting out their take on it, and we're just supposed to decide what is correct based on that. That's a recipe for disaster. You know what has no party affiliation or political agenda? The raw documents. We need to see that FISA application, and if there are people that are dirty in the FBI, we need to know about it, and that should not be a Republican or a Democrat stance on this whole ordeal. Because if any law enforcement agency, be it the FBI or your local police department, has people in them that have a political agenda and are willing to go around the law and lie to judges to suit their political careers and enhance themselves or enhance the politicians that they like, that is something that should be of concern to every person. And so I don't necessarily have a problem with them releasing the memos, but if they are going to release them, which is fine, they need to release the documents that the memos are based on at the same time. Now, maybe they have to be redacted because there is classified information in them. That's okay. I'm fine with that. Put it through the DOJ's filter. I don't want to bother with classified information any more than the next gal, though I will say real quickly that what is funny to me is the Democrats made this huge ordeal about how dangerous it was to put out the GOP memo because of it was going to compromise sources and methods when it came to the FBI. I've read through that thing, I don't know, half a dozen times. I still can't find anything that, as far as I can tell, would be of any threat to our national security having that information out there. In fact, there was nothing in that memo, like I said, that people hadn't already suspected. The only thing that may not have been suspected is that it did reveal that the Papadopoulos investigation started before the Carter Page investigation. That was the only really groundbreaking thing that nobody had thought about before. And that's certainly not a matter of national security. So I'm trying to figure out exactly what it was. I think the Democrats were just saying that because they didn't want the memo out. But the whatever information we're getting out there, I don't want to compromise classified information. I understand that. Put it through the DOJ's filters. Go through the normal channels and redact what needs to be redacted. If there really are things that would endanger our national security, don't redact any more than you have to now. But redact any information that is pertinent and then put it out there and let the public decide. That's what transparency in government really looks like. And if the President of the United States, if Donald Trump really wants to draw a sharp contrast between the way his administration is run and the way the previous administration was run, it would be unprecedented transparency. Because when it came to the Obama administration, they were masters of keeping us in the dark. I would like to see that trend not continue. The ball is in the court of the Republicans and Donald Trump at this point. I hope they'll do the right thing. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
To the distinguished character of patriot, it should be our highest glory to add the more distinguished character of Christian, George Washington.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. You can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. We try to read those on the air whenever we get a chance. And I got to say, I'm going through this, and I saw this in my news feed the other night. Another big revelation that has happened, and it seems as though Grassley, a Democrat from Iowa, who's in the Intelligence Committee, makes an incredible accusation against the Hillary Clinton camp. And, you know, it would be one thing if it were a Republican senator or something like that. But no, this is Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who has released his own memo saying that, according to information that he's found, the Steele dossier, you remember the dossier that was put together by Chris Steele that had information about Trump that they're trying to use to discredit Trump, that they were going to use that information as part of the campaign in the Hillary Clinton camp. It turns out, not only were they funding that research, but they were contributors to it. Now, we've known that Hillary Clinton was involved in composing and comprising that dossier because they were funding, they were paying Chris Steele and them and Fusion GPS. They were behind Chris Steele's work and Steele got the information from the Russians. But according to Grassley, it appears as though not only were they funding the research, that there were people inside the Clinton campaign that were contributing. In other words, some of the information in there came directly from the Clinton campaign. And so it seems as though this thing there's more and more to not like about the Steele dossier as the day goes on. I mean, it just seems like every day we find out something else that takes a stab at its credibility. So it is amazing to me how much we are getting about this right now. There's kind of been a tsunami of information that we're getting. And I thought that I would lay this out for you because I've gotten some complaints and I understand why, because this is a very complicated story. I mean, I do this stuff for a living, and it's hard for me to keep up with. And so I thought real quickly I would just lay out some of the basics for you and help you really grasp what we're talking about here, because this is a difficult story to follow, and I understand that. So, because I've gotten this question before, what is a FISA warrant? So, the FISA courts were established in the Bush administration, and essentially what FISA does is it's a secret court, because there may or may not be information that would be contained within these that would be classified, that are a matter of national security. So instead of going to a regular court where there's a public record to get a warrant on somebody, they say, look, we think this guy might be a terrorist, and so we'd really like you to give us a warrant to go ahead and look at his phone calls and emails and that kind of thing. And then the judge makes a decision based upon that. There's a couple problems with that, primarily constitutional, because you go to a regular court when you have evidence. You go to a FISA court when you have a hunch. You think someone might be involved, but you don't actually have anything to back it up. And that's part of the problem that I have with FISA courts as a whole. Whether or not it has anything to do with the Trump administration or the Russia investigation, any of that stuff, I had a problem with FISA courts way before any of that came out. But that's why the FISA warrant is there, and that's why the FISA courts matter, is because if they can do this to Carter Page, or any, they can do it to you, they can do it to anybody else. As long as they say, well, it may or may not be a national security issue, and we think that they're we have this idea that they may be a threat to national security, they can get a FISA warrant on you. And this has been my problem. Again, if the information in the memo is to be trusted, either the Democrats were straight up lying to this judge. Sorry, not the Democrats. I say that even though they have some very Democratic behavior. The FBI was lying to the judge. Obama's DOJ was lying to the judge, and by omitting, a lie by omission, by not telling him, hey, this thing which we've basically based all the information that we've given you as a reason why we think that there may be Russians working inside the Trump campaign, it all came from opposition research funded by Hillary Clinton's campaign and Fusion GPS. So either that happened, or the bar to get a FISA warrant is so incredibly low that it is something that should be concerning to every single American, because if that's all the information that they need on you to get a FISA warrant, then they could justify putting a FISA warrant and surveying the communications of just about anybody. I mean, if that's all they need, then they could be monitoring you or me right now, and we wouldn't know it, because it's a FISA court, it's a secret court. They don't have to tell us they're doing it. It's not public record. So that's the reason that the FISA court can't be trusted. Take it, Rush.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, you can tweet us at Tactics Radio. Either way you want to get in, we can have you on the show. Love to hear your comments, as always. Now, I think, just real quick, going through the players and everything that's going on to give you kind of a refresher to help you understand the story will be beneficial, so I'll try to do this quickly. Carter Page. That's the person that the FISA warrant was issued against, the person that was a volunteer advisor in the Trump campaign. And so what happened is, back in 2006, he wound up going to Moscow, and based on the Steele dossier, he went to Moscow, met with very high-ranking Russian officials, and that's part of the reason that there was suspect when he joined the Trump campaign. And keep in mind, the intelligence community has known about Carter Page for some time. He's honestly kind of dope, and he really wants people to like him and wants to be seen as this big player in the political realm. And so because of that, he likes to do these, you know, this kind of stuff where he goes and he meets with high-ranking individuals in the government and that kind of thing. So because of that, and because the intelligence community was aware of him, he was an easy target. It was somebody that had met with the Russians that did happen to also be in the Trump campaign. And so it was the most logical route. If you were trying to get an excuse to survey the Trump campaign, that was the easiest route to take. And so you've got Carter Page as the person that the warrant was issued against, and not just issued because he is an American citizen. That has to be refreshed every so often. And so there is not one but four FISA warrants against him, three signed by James Comey, one signed by Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. And then there is McCabe, speaking of him. He's signed one of the warrants. That is according to the memo that we saw released. And according to what we've seen, he recently resigned. We have no idea what the motivation was behind that resignation, but it is interesting that he resigned right along the time that the memo was about to be released, and he's mentioned as being a key player in all this. And McCabe is somebody that I've been keeping an eye on for a while. What originally raised my suspicion about him is the way he handled the Clinton email scandal. Now, he wasn't involved in the Clinton email scandal, a lot of people will say, but here's something that you don't know. Part of the reason that the Hillary Clinton investigation was reopened because of new information that they got right before the election is because Andrew McCabe was in charge of the investigation into Anthony Weiner. And he's the one that had his laptop and found emails on his laptop that were from Clinton's private server. Well, you would think the second that an FBI agent who knows that there's a huge ongoing investigation, or a former investigation in this case, that had been closed, something as high profile, especially as the Clinton investigation, that if you found potential new information on that, you would immediately go to your superiors and the people that were working on that investigation and say, hey, look here, this is some information that might be important. Nope. McCabe was heading that investigation, and he saw that new information and sat on it for weeks. It appears as though what he was trying to do, at least the only logical explanation I can think of why a veteran FBI agent would find something like that, knowing that it was a big deal and not saying anything to anybody else, because Comey found out through somebody other than McCabe. The only motivation that I can think of is that what he was trying to do is either wait until after the election to say something, or just hope that nobody ever found out about it. Because based on what we see, he had no intention of going to anybody else and telling them, hey, by the way, there's potentially harmful information about Hillary Clinton on this thing. There's information that we have that we may or may not have previously had that needs to be looked into on Hillary Clinton's email scandal. We may have found some of the lost emails. Didn't say anything. And isn't it interesting that Andrew McCabe's wife had millions of dollars given to her by the Clinton campaign, by the way, as she was running for a Democrat in Virginia? Isn't that interesting that that happened, you know, just not too long before Andrew McCabe decided to sit on that information? And so he's incredibly suspect, and especially it is shady that he resigned right around the time this memo came out and named him as being one of the key players. Then you have Chris Steele. Chris Steele is the British IM6, which is an intelligence officer. He's kind of like the a less romanticized version of 007. That's what IM6s are. They're essentially British, you know, they compile information, and it's not like it is in the movies, but, you know, they're basically special agents that go around, compile information, find stuff on people. And this is somebody who has been a very reliable source of American intelligence for a while, and that's why a lot of people trusted him. He put together the dossier with the information from Russia. So, based on what we know, the vast majority of the information that he gathered came from Russia, and according to Senator Grassley, a Democrat, it also came from the Hillary campaign itself. So Hillary's campaign people were also contributing to this. Hardly reliable sources of information. And according to this memo, there is a quote in there saying that he was very anti-Trump, saying that he did not want Trump to be the president, that he was actively working against that. And there's a quote in there that he relayed to a FBI officer that proves that point. And again, we know that this memo is looking through a lens. However, that particular part of the memo was a direct quote. So somewhere in that raw information that we're trying to find is that quote that confirms that Steele was desperate to have somebody other than Trump be president. Then, of course, you've got Peter, I believe is the way to pronounce his last name is Strozek. I think that's how you say it. And he was kicked out of the Mueller investigation over the anti-Trump text messages. And it turns out that he was the guy that originally opened the investigation on George Papadopoulos, who was inside the Trump campaign and did suggest that they work with the Russians. Nothing ever came of that, but that's what happened. George Papadopoulos himself is a Trump campaign advisor who, when questioned about his involvement with the Russians and meeting with them, lied to the FBI about it. And he had worked with the Russians, wanted to get information from the Russians. The Trump campaign apparently said, no, no, we don't need to do that. And then that was the end of it. But the point is, there was very much reason to believe he was working with the Russians, because it turns out he was communicating with them. He was never able to link it up with the Trump campaign, but there was reason, more than enough reason, for an FBI agent to be suspicious of that. But here's what I think a lot of people are missing in this discussion. Have you noticed how often, in just explaining this, not trying to make a case for one side or the other, just explaining who all the players are and what's going on here, do you notice how often I had to bring up the word Russia? This is what I'm afraid that we're completely missing. That both sides are so busy arguing with the others, saying that, well, they're lying about this, no, they're lying about this, well, they're misrepresenting this, they're misrepresenting this, and you shouldn't trust this memo, no, you shouldn't trust their memo. I don't know how productive that is, but I think it's what the Russians want. They want us so busy fighting with one another that we forget that what this all goes back to is the Russians. They tried to hack into our election system, failed, but tried. They tried to influence us. They put out Russian bots on the internet to try to skew people one way or the other to cause division between us. Russia is the one we should be focusing on. Because I'm not saying that we ignore any wrongdoing by people on our side. If there's problems in the FBI and we need to clear that up, I've been saying that since this whole thing started. However, I'm afraid that what doesn't get brought up enough in this conversation is that the Russians are essentially getting exactly what they want. They've stated, made no bones about it, that they want to be the top dog. Vladimir Putin wants Russia to be back to where it was under when it was the Soviet Union. He wants to bring back the USSR. He said that. It's not conjecture. It's not me thinking maybe that's Putin's endgame. No, that's him saying that that's what he wants to happen. And what we're missing in all of this is that Russia has intentionally driven us apart. They've intentionally done things to undermine our faith in our institutions, like the FBI, like our voting system. And they have pushed that and pushed that and pushed that. To Americans are saying, we don't have anything we can trust anymore. And that coupled with constantly being at each other's throats over what happened in the past election, what's going on right now, all it's doing is driving us apart and causing chaos. And that is exactly what the Russians want. Because I think the Russians understand now and learned from the Reagan administration that if they want to take down America, they're not going to be able to do it from the outside. It's just not going to happen. They can't beat us into submission. They can't go to open war with us. They can't compete with us in energy or economics. If they're going to bring down America, they're going to have to do it from the inside. That's the only way they're going to be able to pull it off. They're going to have to take the exact same strategy that the Greeks took against the Trojans, which is, we're not breaching those walls. Can't be done. If we want to bring them down, only way we're going to do it is by getting inside. And that's why you had the Russians, and we know this for a fact now, I can go back to my sources, I can go back to the news stories, that there were Russian agents working within the Trump administration, trying to get access to them, and the Clinton administration. In those two campaigns, there were people trying to get close to both of those people. We had the Russian secret agent trying to work her way into the State Department when Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. We've got the Russians offering information, dirt on the other side, to both sides. The Russians didn't care who won the election. They just wanted to be on the inside because their ultimate goal is to take the United States down. And that's the part that we're missing, and I think that we do so to our own detriment. I'm not saying that we don't hash this out. I'm not saying that we don't talk about cleaning up what's going on in our administration, because it is of the utmost importance, and this is a perfect scenario of how easily the FISA courts can be abused to target a political enemy. We already know that the IRS was weaponized against Obama's political enemies. It appears as though, based on the information we have now, that the DOJ was as well. And that is something that absolutely needs to be addressed. But I'm saying while we're doing that, because we can chew gum and walk at the same time, while we are doing that, let us not forget that the Russians are the origin of all this. And yeah, there were people that played along with it. There were people that are playing into Russia's hands. But at the end of the day, Russia is the true enemy. Let us not lose sight of that. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The best friend to American liberty, who is the most sincere and active in promoting true and undefiled religion, and who sets himself with the greatest firmness to bear down profanity and immorality of every kind. John Witherspoon, signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Before we get back to our subject at hand, I do want to mention my good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. These guys are absolutely phenomenal. They know exactly what they're doing. And you would think that they would have to, after 50 years of being right here in the River Region repairing different cars and trucks. A lot has changed over the time. Lots of things, you know, businesses going in and out. That's one thing that hasn't, is that Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center remains in business and has for so long because they offer great service at a great price. The people in the community, they know them, they like them, they like the service that they offer, they like how quickly they can get in and out. Having a little problem with my truck today, so I'm probably going to head by there myself, because when I endorse a product, when I endorse a company, it's because I actually use them and I actually believe in them. And there is no doubt in my mind that they are the best auto shop in the city, and that's one of the reasons that I endorse them. So if there's anything wrong with your car or truck, even if you're way out in Millbrook like I am, or maybe you live in Prattville or Wetumpka, the best place you can go, it's worth the drive, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. So go by and see them today. Now, getting back to this memo thing, we'll kind of wrap this up and go in a different direction in the second hour, but I do think that this is important. I never wanted to be that show that just gripes about things and tells you what all's wrong. So in the spirit of trying to find some solutions, really quickly, I do think that there are a few solutions that we could all agree on that wouldn't necessarily be partisan one way or the other that would really help and really solve a lot of the problems that we're seeing because of all this partisan bickering and these dueling memos. The first thing, and I think this is the most important, more transparency, no more dueling memos, no more seeing things through the lens of one party or the other and trying to sort through what's true, what's not. Just give us the raw documents. The American people are intelligent enough to figure this out on our own. So just give us the raw information. Let us make our own decisions. I mean, yes, redact anything that might be a problem for national security, but give us the raw documents. That's the main thing. Because this whole memo thing, that's just another tool that they can pretend to be transparent, but not really give you the information. And that is incredibly troubling to me. So instead of this memo thing, and I hope that this doesn't set a trend where this is how we deal with classified information, just give us the raw information. Let the DOJ redact anything that they need to, but give us the information. Let us make our own decisions. Second, no more FISA courts spying on citizens without warrants. Because it is easy to see, based on this case, how that can be abused very quickly. There's a reason we have a Fourth Amendment. There's a reason that you can't just go through someone's personal effects and look for crimes, potential crimes. That's not how you treat American citizens. And luckily, there are a few senators that are on board with this idea. We've got Senator Rand Paul that brought this up. The FISA courts are illegal. They're unconstitutional. We don't need to have them surveying American citizens. Third, we need to restore the integrity of the FBI because we need to be able to trust the FBI and all of our law enforcement agencies. A lot of Democrats have, I think, maybe even through good intentions, but mistakenly, said that the Republicans are trying to degrade law enforcement. That's not what we're doing at all. If there's a law enforcement agency that is dirty, there is nothing more degrading to it than letting it stay corrupt. We've got to clean out anything that is of suspect in the FBI and restore our faith in our institutions. And fourth and finally, stop overclassifying things that don't need to be classified. It's obvious that this memo didn't contain any classified material, and yet they said that that means we're overclassifying things. Some things don't need to be classified. Give us the maximum amount of information that you can. That's my solution. Hour two up next.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Jimmy Kimmel making the rounds and making some derogatory comments about conservatives on a podcast. We go there now on Tactics.
Try your best.
Welcome back, all. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. I wanted to talk about Jimmy Kimmel's comments and didn't get to do the show the other day. Intended to talk about this the other day because it just happened, I think, Monday. But Kimmel goes on this podcast called, the title of it is Pod Save America. And it's a distinctively left-leaning podcast. They have him on as a guest. And part of the reason for this, if you haven't been paying attention, is that it really started with, I believe, he did one on the Vegas shooting. No, actually, this started with healthcare. His first monologue that he did was on healthcare. And so he's done one on guns. He's done it on healthcare. He's done it on other political... What he does is he'll take time out of his monologue, which he's usually telling jokes in, and goes into these political diatribes about what he thinks that people ought to be doing in government, that kind of thing. He basically goes into political commentator mode, and it looks much more similar to something that would be on Fox News or CNN than something that you would expect to see on a late-night comedy. The difference, of course, being he's not a professional political commentator, so usually they're inaccurate. But nonetheless, going through Jimmy Kimmel, they were asking him about his job and about these different political monologues that he goes on during his usual comedy monologue. And they were asking him about why so many late-night talk show hosts are liberal. Because the vast majority of them are. There's not been, to my knowledge, that I can think of any conservative late-night host, or at least none that come to mind. And so they were asking him about that. And his response was that most talk show hosts are liberal because it, quote, requires a level of intelligence. And I think that really, because Kimmel is a part of that elite Hollywood crowd, that this is indicative, and you can see in their behavior, he's, you know, maybe putting words to it, but you can see it in a lot of the DNA and the way that Hollywood reacts to things. What Kimmel's saying here is indicative of what Hollywood as a community thinks. That if you are intelligent, then you are a liberal. That the reason that you are not a liberal is because you're not intelligent enough to be a liberal. So, really, they view the middle of the country, the people out in the rural areas in this nation, the people that tend to vote more Republican, as being intellectually inferior to the ones that are liberal because they fancy themselves as intellectuals. Which is funny for a number of reasons, and we're going to get to that in a second. But that's essentially what it all boils down to, that if you're a conservative, it's because you're not smart enough to be a liberal. They really do look down their nose at the entire middle of the country. That if you don't think the way they think, it's only because you're not intelligent enough to do so. There's several reasons why, from both a argumentative standpoint, in other words, trying to form arguments that persuade people, so a rhetorical standpoint, as well as looking at this from the standpoint of, you know, the moral application of it, that someone, you assume academically that anyone that disagrees with your stance, it's because they're not intelligent enough. Well, that gives you an excuse to not consider them. Let's look at this. Let's say if we adopted this attitude in the scientific community, for example. Anyone that disagrees with my theory only does so because they're not smart enough to understand it. Well, then that means that you have set up an argument to where no one can ever question your theory. Because if anyone ever does, well, it's only because they're just not smart enough. That would destroy science as we know it. That would destroy any field of academic study as we know it. Because if nobody's allowed to question anything, if nobody's allowed to say, whether it's to the establishment or just to you as an individual, hey, there's some problems with that theory and I'd like to discuss those with you, then you can never grow outside of where you are. If you're refusing to even acknowledge that somebody with an opinion different than yours may be right, then you are essentially isolating yourself in a soundproof bubble that you refuse to even consider anyone else's opinions because you're saying they're academically inferior to you. And here's what's so funny about that whole thing. And I say this as someone who is a broadcaster. Obviously, Jimmy Kimmel's job and mine are very, very different. And his is far more prestigious and pays better than mine. But having an inside track to this is one thing that really helps me with doing this analysis. Because what this also says about Kimmel is that he believes that his job specifically, being a late-night talk show host, is proof of his intellect. Now, don't get me wrong. Being the host of a late-night talk show on a major network, big accomplishment. Not trying to degrade that at all. But he didn't get there necessarily because of his intellect. I think you have to have a certain level of intelligence to do any kind of broadcasting because you have to be well-spoken, that kind of thing. But let's observe what the man really does. He walks in front of a camera every night and reads jokes that other people wrote for him for 8 minutes. I'm sorry, but walking in front of people, telling jokes, and getting them to laugh, especially when those jokes were written by a staff, not all of them, if any of them, were even written by you. That doesn't make you a genius. Again, I'm not trying to poke fun at all late-night talk show hosts or anything like that, but let's be honest. That doesn't exactly take a PhD in, you know, physics or aeronautics or whatever, you know, academic field that you would think of. Now, does that take talent? Obviously it takes talent. Jimmy Kimmel is a very talented individual. Because some people, the reason that he's there and other people aren't, is because he can tell jokes and he can make people laugh and he can do it in a charming and endearing way. That's what Jimmy Kimmel's good at. That's what he should stick to. And so, yes, it takes talent, but talent is not the same as intellect. It takes style, it takes charisma. These are all things that Jimmy Kimmel excels at, and that's why he is where he is. But telling jokes does not mean you're a genius. Most comedians, I would say probably on average, are more intelligent than the average person. But that doesn't mean that that you are right on everything or that you are more intelligent than other people because you can tell jokes. Again, I'm not trying to insult the man's intelligence. I'm just saying, and I'm not saying that his job is super easy. But I'm looking at his political commentary, and they're terrible. There are times where I can pick apart a person's argument, and it's legitimately a challenge for me. Because they have arguments that do make sense, even if I disagree with them. They'll have a strong point here or there, something that I can't necessarily refute. And so I have to look at it in a different way. And sometimes I even look at it in a way and say, okay, maybe I've been wrong on some things. Maybe they got a pretty good point here. But nonetheless, when you're looking at Jimmy Kimmel, I've gone through several of his political commentaries now because he insists on keeping to do them. And first of all, a couple of them were written by other people. One of them was written by Chuck Schumer, actually. And so he didn't even write his own political commentary. And then he's going through this, claiming that he's a genius and that's why so many late-night talk show hosts are liberal, is because they're just more intelligent than the average person. But you're looking at his political commentary that he does on his show, it's strictly emotion. He never does any kind of logical appeal, anything like that. He basically gets on TV and either holds a baby or cries or talks about, oh my gosh, the children! It's because Republicans hate the children, and almost always gets his facts wrong. In fact, when he was talking about the CHIP program, you'll remember we did a segment of it on here where we played it line by line and gave you a commentary on what was going on. Even the Washington Post had to come out and say, yeah, there was nothing to that. Uber liberal Washington Post said, Jimmy Kimmel got that one completely wrong. In fact, the Republicans had already voted to put the CHIP plan back in place. The House had put it through, and it was the Democrats that voted against it. They were the ones that said, we want something else. Now, it wasn't because the Democrats were voting against the CHIP program in specific. By the way, for those of you who don't remember, the CHIP program is a program to help kids with medical problems that their families can't afford the care. But anyway, getting back to it, the Washington Post even brought this up, that it was the Republicans that had already in two different times voted for the budget that included the CHIP program, and the Democrats voted against it. Democrats weren't specifically voting against the CHIP program. They were voting against the budget as a whole. But Jimmy Kimmel had gotten that one completely backwards. And that's the way it usually happens with his commentary, because it's all emotion-based. You can tell he doesn't do a lot of research on it. And so here's what I'm saying. I realize that I couldn't just turn around and do Jimmy Kimmel's job. I couldn't just do a comedic monologue, so I'm not saying that it doesn't require any kind of skill or talent or anything like that. But I can tell you this right now. If the half a dozen times that he's gone out and done political commentary on his show in the past few months is indicative of how good he would be at political commentary, think about how it would be if he had to do 2 hours. I'm not guaranteeing, and again, this is not about, I'm not trying to make this about me, because I don't think I'm necessarily of above average intelligence anyway. But if I can pull this job off, and I would do a better job, that is indicative of me that I would be doing a better job taking Jimmy Kimmel's place than he would of me. Because if that's the best he can do and he only has to fill 6, 7, 8 minutes, imagine how many inaccuracies there would be if he had to do a 2-hour radio show every day. And so, again, I'm not trying to compare which job is more intellectual or whatever, but he needs to stick to what he's good at. He was put there to do jokes. And so when he delves off into my area of expertise, political commentary, yeah, I'm going to talk about it. But this is indicative of the way that the Hollywood elites kind of see the middle of the country anyway. That they're just not intelligent enough to be liberal. That's a dangerous assumption, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on. Because if you assume that everyone that disagrees with you only does so because they're a moron, you're never going to listen to them and you're never going to be able to actually grow. And if you don't happen to be right on something, you'll never be able to figure out how wrong you are about it. 860-1440, we'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, you can tweet at Tactics Radio. And I wanted to go a little bit more general than just focusing specifically on what Jimmy Kimmel was saying. I think that it does show how a lot in the media, a lot in Hollywood, and a lot of people on the left do view conservatives. Generally speaking, and you can tell this in the way that they've talked about Donald Trump, you can tell this in the way they've talked about George W. Bush and other Republicans, they do think that there's something to the point that they're Republicans are just not intelligent to understand, and if they were only more intelligent, then they would be liberal. Typically speaking, conservatives think that liberals are well-intended, but misguided. There's not an assumption that every liberal is stupid. Now, some liberals are stupid, but that's done on a case-by-case basis. For example, I think that Barack Obama was a pretty intelligent individual. I think that his policies were awful. Think that he was a terrible president. But that doesn't change the fact that I think he was intelligent. You can simultaneously think someone is smart and still disagree with them. And so there are arguments that liberals will usually make to support this idea that liberals are the more intellectual of the two camps. First of all, they'll point out that more college graduates are liberal. This is something that is typically true. However, part of that could be because colleges have become breeding grounds for liberalism. That started way back in the Woodrow Wilson days. Keep in mind, it was Woodrow Wilson who was the president of a college and said that his job was to make men as unlike their fathers as possible. And so, considering that the liberals have been controlling the education system for darn near 100 years, okay, college graduates voting more liberal, that may be part of the problem. That's kind of a side effect of what we're seeing here. But a college degree does not automatically make you smarter. It means you're educated. There's a difference in education and intellect. Because I can tell you right now, there are men, blue-collar workers, that can do things that I don't understand. Part of the reason that I take my truck to mechanics down at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center, just to give them one more mention, is because their mechanics are, they have a different skill set than me. They're more intelligent than me when it comes to being able to pull off some of the things that they do with knowing all the different engines and the parts and everything. I don't see how they do it. I couldn't intellectually do what they do. Having a college degree does not mean that I'm automatically smarter than everybody else that doesn't have a college degree. And so that's a fallacious argument just on its surface. And another thing, too, while it's true that more college graduates as a whole, as a community, tend to lean liberal, that depends on the department. Because when you start breaking it down into what areas they majored in and what areas the professors, because most college professors are also liberal. But if you break it down by department, you'll see that that's not true in every single department. And what departments usually heavily favor conservatives? Engineering, mathematics, economics. Arguably the most intellectual of the fields of study. Because I got to tell you, I had a lot of fraternity brothers that were different kinds of engineering majors. You know, there were different kinds, civil engineers, aerospace engineering, even polymer fiber. I had a couple guys that were polymer fiber engineers. And really, really high level math involved in that. And in that, in the engineering departments, as a general rule, they tend to be more conservative than liberal, both the professors and the students in that field of study. Same thing when you're talking about economics. The vast majority of economics professors, economic students, they tend to be more conservative, especially when it comes to fiscal matters, because the economics of a free market works. And it's been proven to work over and over and over and over again. Obviously, you have outliers, just like you do in the other. You'll occasionally find a uber-liberal liberal arts student or an uber-conservative liberal arts student. There are exceptions to all these rules, but as a general rule, as a when you're taking a survey of these people, yeah, college degree recipients as a whole tend to be more liberal. But there are several departments, including engineering and economics, where that's not necessarily the case. Same thing with mathematics. And so it really does, on the surface, appear to be a strong argument. But once you start breaking it down, you see that it doesn't tell the whole story. They'll also say urban areas, well, they tend to be more liberal. Well, for that argument to make sense, you have to assume that urban people are smarter. And they don't offer anything as backup to prove that. Now, I actually did bring this argument up to one person, and they said, well, urban areas tend to have more people with college degrees. I said, well, hold on. Now you're getting into a circle. You're saying that people with college degrees are smarter because they live in urban areas, and people in urban areas are smarter because they have college degrees. He was building his argument in a circular fashion to where he was trying to confirm one unconfirmed point with another unconfirmed point. Circular logic. And like I've said, there's a difference in intellect and education. Some of the smartest people I've ever known were not educated people. I mean, let's look at Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, who sometimes tends to be pretty liberal. Well, here's the thing. He's incredibly intelligent. Wouldn't have been able to build the company that he did without a lot of business knowledge, without knowledge of the product itself, the ability to build the Windows operating system. Very, very, very smart individual. Dropped out of college. Education is not the same as intellect. And what is interesting on this is that actually studies have shown that conservatives watch more news. As a general rule, liberals don't really watch the news all that much. And there's also, and this is something that I get to talk about in my own job here, there is a reason that talk radio is typically considered the preferred medium of conservatism. Because look at all the talk radio guys that are conservative. You have the occasional liberal talk show host, but the talk shows that get the most ratings, that are the biggest deal, you've got Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, all the guys that are here on News Radio 1440. Then you've also got guys like Glenn Beck. You know, you've got all these people that are really big deals, that they have these huge ratings, huge networks. Liberals tend to not have that nearly as much in talk radio. Why is that? It's because of the way the source material works. Because what do liberals prefer? They prefer memes. They really like memes. Little internet pictures that maybe have a sentence or two on them. Why? Because if you have to think about liberalism for more than about 10 consecutive seconds, you'll realize a lot of the stuff they promote doesn't make any sense. And that's the problem that you run into. With conservatism, it takes time. You have to learn it. You have to hash it out. Generally, people that are conservative have a better working knowledge of history. And there's a reason that a lot of the New York Times best-selling books are done by conservative commentators. Bill O'Reilly has been on the New York best-selling for a long time. Several of his books have. Same thing with Glenn Beck, same thing with Rush, same thing with Mark Levin. So apparently all these conservatives that liberals regard as idiots read a lot more, or at least read a lot more about politics than liberals do. Because it's not real often you see a book by Rachel Maddow on the New York best-selling. I don't know if she ever has been. I don't even know if she has written any books. Honestly, if I were a liberal commentator, I wouldn't bother writing a whole lot of books because it doesn't seem that there's a huge market for it. And again, that's not a dig at all liberals. I'm not saying that none of them read, but or that they can't read or anything like that. I'm just saying as a general rule, you can't say that conservatives are the ones that are intellectually inferior and then look at how much they read, how much they listen, how much they pay attention to the news. If anything, all that data contradicts that argument. And I do think that this is indicative of a larger problem in liberalism as a whole. It assumes that all conservatives are either morons or evil. Sometimes both. And what they're doing is they're assigning motive. For example, we'll just take one quick example here. They assume that if you are against universal health care, it's because you hate people and want them to die. Or because you're too dumb to understand what socialized medicine would do, even though the data actually shows that our system works way better than any system in the world. It's expensive, costs money, but it does work better. And so that's the problem that they run into. They assume that the people that disagree with them either are too stupid to understand the argument or they're just evil and don't like people. And we could go on to each different policy disagreement that Republicans have with Democrats or conservatives have with liberals, but you see my point. It also assumes that feelings are a proper argument. You know, if you disagree with someone on, for example, homosexual marriage, just saying, well, love wins, that's not the end of an argument. That doesn't mean that you've won the argument just because you feel as though feeling strongly about something is not the same as having a reasonable argument to back it up. We can see this in healthcare, the environment, immigrants. You know, you love trees, you love animals. That's great. Doesn't mean that because you love trees and animals and you have a vested interest in it, that you know everything about it and are right on things like global warming or pollution. Having strong feelings towards a subject does not make you an expert on it. And that's the problem that they typically tend to run into as well. Because of this, they assume that anyone arrives at a different conclusion than them either doesn't have those same feelings or isn't smart enough to understand the argument. Because progressives believe that mankind naturally progresses, that's what a progressive is, they believe that mankind naturally progresses past certain ideas into better ones. The difference fundamentally that they have with conservatives on that is that conservatives tend to believe that there are eternal truths. And that's the big difference. There are certain things that are right now, they're right then, and they'll always be right. Liberals believe that mankind has to progress constantly in an upward direction. But not all change is for the positive. Some change can be bad. Some change can be regressive. And that's something that it's hard for us to communicate to progressives when we're talking to them. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
proud enemy of God, I scruple not to call him an enemy to his country. John Witherspoon, signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. I didn't get to do the show yesterday, so I wanted to mention this story as well. You remember that we were talking Monday about the different commercials that were going on during the Super Bowl, and one of the ones that got brought up was the Dodge MLK ad. I didn't even know that this thing was controversial. I hadn't seen any stories about that until we had a caller named Ben who called in and said that there was a controversy. So I looked up some of the stories, looked up what people were saying about it, and I've got to say, we have gotten so easily offended that we cannot distinguish between a tribute to somebody and an insult. And this is a great, inspiring commercial. I really liked it. Didn't even know there was a controversy behind it. Named it the best ad of the entire Super Bowl. Thought it was the best ad of the Super Bowl. And here's the thing about this. All the social justice warriors and people that are complaining, saying that, well, how can you relegate Dr. King to just selling trucks and using him in a truck ad or all that? Look, I would bet money, put down money, that right now at least 90% of the people that were complaining about this particular ad, I'll even say 95%, none of them had ever heard that speech before by Dr. King. So they would have probably never even heard that soundbite of Dr. King's speech had it not been for Ram Trucks making an ad about it. Which tells me that Ram actually did a great service to Dr. King by using his words in their ad. By saying to the world, hey, this is something that Dr. King talked about. Because most of the people watching the commercial, and I would say even 95% of the people that were complaining about using his voice and using his words in this commercial, even though the words were incredibly inspiring, it fit well together, that kind of thing, that they have probably never heard this speech and would have never heard this speech had it not been for them making this ad. And I have a little bit of background in this. Every year, Ram does one serious ad for the Super Bowl. And the truth is, they don't do it to sell trucks. Because if they were doing it to sell trucks, they would have done a ad kind of like the ad that they did do and put in the Super Bowl this year with the Vikings riding around in the truck, and they eventually wind up going to Minnesota and showing how tough the truck is, lots of product placement, a very clear advertising message. But every year, Ram Trucks does one ad that barely even includes the trucks. And that was about at least 80% of the commercial. Had nothing, it didn't show the trucks. There might have been a truck in the background or whatever, but it was about different people bringing food and water to disaster relief victims, people helping people with their baby. There was a woman performing an ultrasound at one point, and it was just a general overview of life in America and how we're able to help one another and to serve one another, because that was the theme of what Dr. King was saying, and the theme of the commercial is built to serve. And so if they were just trying to use Dr. King's voice to sell trucks, they did a very poor job of it, because the truck's not even in the commercial for most of the time. And the reason that I know that they're not just doing it to sell trucks is because I have some personal experience with this. Paul Harvey, he was the voice of the Ram commercial, I think about 2, maybe 3 years ago. They took out a Super Bowl ad, and they had Paul Harvey's voice, one of my broadcasting heroes. I know a lot of you guys know him. And he read, "So God Made a Farmer." And this is why I have an inside track to this, and I know that they don't just do it to sell trucks. What that ad was used for was to gather donations for the FFA. And they donated well over $1 million to that organization, which helps kids learn about agriculture and the ag industry. It's a high school organization. Now, do they get promoted because of it? Sure they do. They get good PR from it. But that doesn't change the fact that what they primarily used the ad to do was to donate to a charitable cause. And that goes along with, I don't know if they had any cause or donated any with Dr. King, but I know that that's not necessarily why they took that ad out, because if it was just to sell trucks, well, they would have done a very poor job of it. And here's another thing that I think that most people making this argument do not know about or have not considered. Do you know that I can't play a clip of Dr. Martin Luther King right now? Can't do it. Can't play the I Have a Dream speech. I could not go on the internet, pull up the I Have a Dream speech, and legally play it over the airwaves right now. Do you know why? Because the King family keeps a very tight lid on his copyright. So when Dr. King's speeches, it's kind of like Disney. You can't just play Dr. King on the air because of how tightly they keep on the rights to his words and his speeches, which is fine. Legally, it's their right to do so. I disagree with the way that they're so tight about it, but, you know, that's their prerogative. Legally, they are able to do that if that's what they want to do. But the point is, so for Ram to use Dr. King's speech like that, they had to run it by Dr. King's family, show them the commercial ahead of time, and ask for the rights to that speech. And I'm sure that the King family sold it to him and made a little money off of it, and that's fine. But the point is, if you think that that ad was inappropriate and it was wrong for them to use Dr. King's speech, talk to Dr. King's family, because they had to release the rights to use his voice and his speech in that commercial in the way that they did. You ever have that person that you could never please no matter what you do? It seemed that it didn't matter what you did, that you were going to upset them regardless. That's the social justice warriors that were complaining about this ad. They just constantly roam this earth looking for things to be offended by and to complain about. So you're going to offend them no matter what. I think that that, if anything, is what is indicative of them complaining about this ad, which was a huge tribute to Dr. King. And somehow still they read it as an insult. Chaplin's Report is up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Chaplin's Report is about to start. Now, to understand where Jesus is coming from in this particular passage, he's talking to his disciples, specifically to his apostles, and giving them kind of what is commonly referred to as the limited commission. We all know the great commission that happens at the end of the gospel after Christ is risen. He says, go out into the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Well, this is the limited commission. This is while Jesus is still alive. He's still building a reputation, and he's saying, go out and spread the good news that salvation is almost here, that it is on its way, and you're to go out to Jerusalem and to Judea and to all the Jews, and you're supposed to talk to them about what's coming. And in this particular passage, Jesus says this. This comes from Matthew 10:16 through 17. Behold, I send you out as sheep amongst wolves, so be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves, but beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues. When it comes to spreading the gospel, the truth is, if there aren't people that are bothered by what we're saying, then we're not doing our jobs. And I know that sounds weird to say that Christ's message of love and salvation and compassion could be controversial, but you have to keep in mind, we're talking about a guy that was literally killed for preaching that message. And that's one thing that I really admire about the Bible. It's not this prosperity gospel or this promise that everything's going to be okay and that everything's going to be great, and as long as you're a Christian, then nothing bad will ever happen to you. In fact, it guarantees the exact opposite, that we're going into extreme peril. that you're going to be scourged and people are going to hate you and say all manner of evil things against you if you're preaching the truth. There's times where Christ would have his disciples with him and he'd say, look, the road you're about to walk is not easy. And we would see in the Gospels that there were lots of disciples that left because of that. Jesus was not going to sugarcoat things for anybody. He told them the truth. He was honest with them. He said, this is of the utmost importance. This is how you be right with God. But be warned, to be right with God means to be at odds with the world. And the world is not going to like and not going to react well to the things that you're saying. And that's why he gives this advice to his disciples here. It's like, you guys are going to be sheep going into dens of wolves. Let's be realistic about what's happening here. You ever seen a wolf? You ever seen sheep? I worked with sheep my whole life. If you're a betting man and you've got a fight between a sheep and a wolf, do not put money on the sheep. The wolf's going to win every single time. It's just what he's equipped to do. And so when it comes to Christians versus the world, we're fighting against an enemy that we know can tear us apart. Physically, can do all manner of evil towards us. And that's why Jesus advises us to do this. Be as wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We're not going to be able to use brute force or strength or anything like that in favor of the gospel, in favor of the kingdom of God. And that's not how Jesus would have wanted it, because that's not what he did. He commands us to be compassionate, to be gentle. That when people come against us, that we respond in a way that the world wouldn't understand, with love and compassion for our fellow man, knowing that that's not going to help us. But he also advises us to be wise. Let's look at what Paul did for a second. He used his Roman citizenship, for example, to get himself out of trouble. Now, eventually, that probably kept him alive for a while. He had to appeal to Caesar to do so. And that did lead to the gospel spreading in Rome. But that was a moment where he was as harmless as a dove, but wise as a serpent. And that's part of the reason that I do this show, is that I do believe that Christians really need to be able to defend themselves, defend their beliefs, even though I'm not necessarily teaching you how to do that as the core. I mean, I do it in the chaplain's report, and that's the reason that I bring that up. But we have to be able to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And that means, strategically, when we go out into the world, we plan things ahead of time. We think about how we're going to spread our message and explain how and why these things are true, why these things take place, and why we believe them. But we also understand what going out into the world means. It means, just like it did for the apostles, there are going to be people that are not happy with our message and people that hate us for it. It's a very serious responsibility. But God's work promises that we will go through hardship and struggle, but it also promises that he's going to be by our side, and that at the end of our struggle, when we finished the course and kept the faith, that we've got a reward waiting for us. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.